Now you are listening to Talk of the Town.
Talk of the Town
with Ray Hanania. Talk of the Town brought to you by Life Run Medical Alert Systems.
And good afternoon. I'm Ray Hanania, and this is Talk of the Town Radio, broadcast live on YahalaVoice.com radio and 1450 AM radio in Chicago. And you can listen live in Chicago, of course, but anywhere in the world by going to YahalaVoice.com. It's Friday, December 5th. Our producer is Khalid Khilfa. And if you want to share your opinion, we want to hear it. Our phone number is 708-321-1313, extension 1. Talk of the Town is brought to you by Life Run Medical Alert Systems, the best emergency system for seniors and people in healthcare need available today. 1-800-421-3366. We broadcast live every Friday at 4 p.m. and rebroadcast Mondays at 11 a.m. online at YahalaVoice.com. Download our podcasts every week at iTunes or off our website at TheArabDailyNews.com. I want to note that now I'm not only writing for Creator Syndicate internationally on Middle East issues, but also locally at the Des Plaines Valley News, the Southwest News Herald, the Regional News, and the Payless Reporter newspapers on Chicago political and social topics. This week, we're going to be talking about Israel's government. Is it breaking up? Far short of the four-year term. What can early elections bring that are scheduled now for March 17th? Almost two-thirds of Israelis, according to newspaper reports, would prefer a prime minister other than Benjamin Netanyahu. And I'm in that two-thirds, by the way. According to a poll that just came out this week, it was done by the Jerusalem Post and their sister paper, Ma'ariv. So it's kind of interesting. 60% of the respondents say They don't want Netanyahu as prime minister, and 34% say yes, yet the Likud party, which is Netanyahu's party, is still popular. To help us understand what's going to be happening and what it all means or what it could mean, we have veteran Israeli political journalist Larry Dorfner on the line with us to talk about what we can expect here on Talk of the Town Radio. Dorfner was a columnist and feature writer for the Jerusalem Post, as well as correspondent in Israel for U.S. News and World Report for many years. He also wrote a number of feature articles for the Sunday Times of London during the Second Intifada, and he's been writing for American Jewish publications since 1990. Bradley Burson, a friend of mine, described him as probably as far left as a centrist can be, which kind of puts him right on top of me. Larry, welcome to the show, and thank you for joining us from Israel. Yeah, you're right. That's right. It's plus 972, correct?
Right.
Yeah, that's a great online publication, and I think if – what's the website for it? Let's give it a plug. Khalid? Hey, Larry?
Yeah.
Oh, there you are. Good. I think it's 972.com. Let's see.
Oh, I'm sorry. It's 972mag.com.
Yes, 972mag.com if you want to read some of the columns. Larry, give us an overview. Why? I mean, we're 2 years short of Netanyahu's original scheduled reelection, and yet it seems like everything's falling apart. Is it falling apart, or is he trying to make some political move to strengthen his position?
No, it's a virtual certainty that there's going to be new elections on March 17th. The Knesset has already taken the first vote for it. It's expected to take the final votes Sunday or Monday, and that'll be that. I mean, there's going to be an election on March 17th. That's a virtual certainty.
And what does it mean? I mean, in terms of politics and the peace process, for example, let's talk about Israeli politics. Very conservative. Netanyahu's been around a long time. His predecessors have been around a long time since, you know, after Rabin was murdered in 1995. What does it mean? What's the potential for politics here?
Well, like you said, that poll shows that the Likud right now is doing very well, but people are tired of Netanyahu. I think there's a very good chance that Netanyahu will not win re-election.
Wow. Listen, that would be huge. That would be huge, wouldn't it?
A very good chance he could lose.
Now, I know the left in Israel would be very excited about that, but I'm always worried about the Arabs because, you know, there's a group of them that embrace this anti-normalization. They don't want anybody to participate. Can he lose without the Arabs participating, let's say, if they do what they always do and boycott?
But I think the Arabs are going to vote.
I hope they do.
Every indication is that they will.
I hope you're right. But the turnout has always been low.
Yeah, I think, in fact, there's an impetus for them to come out and vote, you know, in greater numbers this time because the Knesset passed this lousy law that makes it harder for small parties to get into the Knesset.
Right.
To get elected to the Knesset. And that law was clearly aimed, in large part, at the smaller Arab parties. Also at the smaller ultra-Orthodox Jewish parties, but mainly at the smaller Arab parties. So now the Arab parties, they need to unite and get a big vote to get into the Knesset. Some people think that they could even end up with a larger representation in the Knesset than they had before. But the idea of a boycott, Ray, I don't think that's in the air.
But it's happened before the last couple elections, hasn't it?
It happened at least once or twice that I know of in the 90s. It happened in the 1990s. I'm not aware that it's happened since then. It might have, but I'm just not aware. I know it happened, you know, in the 1999. Oh.
I think in the last 2 years ago, didn't they just?
2001.
Yeah.
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, I was going to say that I think two years ago, the vote could have been much stronger, but there was this big movement to, like, you know, stay out of it. And it was very depressing as a Palestinian because I know that they're 20% of the population. They're about 15% of the vote, aren't they?
Right.
15% exactly. Can make a difference.
Sure. For sure.
Now, listen, if Netanyahu were to lose office, I know there's some Arabs that don't agree with me, but I don't care. I think it would be the best thing that would happen. It might regenerate the peace process if we had somebody more willing and open who honestly believed in two states. Do you think that that's a possibility? I mean, is that what's at stake?
Well, here's the way I see it. I don't think you're going to get a real left-winger to get elected because the left is just very weak in Israel.
Yeah.
However, there is one candidate. His name is Moshe Kahlon. He's a former Likudnik. He's formerly with Likud. He's going to run in this election under a new party. And he's running mainly as a centrist. And he calls himself centrist, slightly to the right.
Right.
Okay. He's not a left winger. He's not a two-stater. But, you know,
a little conservative, but
yeah. I think he has the potential. I think he has the potential to beat Netanyahu. Okay, there was a poll, I think it might have been the same poll that you referred to, that showed him stacking up against, that people preferred him in a direct, you know, face-off against Netanyahu, showed him getting 46% support compared to only 36% support for Netanyahu. So I think Kahlon has the potential to win. And if he does, you know, he would probably form a government. He's going to need some right-wing party, but he could also form, you know, let's say partly right-wing, partly centrist.
Right.
And listen, if we want to take a very, very hopeful, optimistic attitude, there is a possibility that he could gradually move to the left and eventually come around to seeing that, yeah, we got to make a deal. We got to end the occupation.
Yeah, isn't the whole challenge that we face that people lack confidence and, you know, it's not that people don't want peace, it's they just don't believe in it anymore, they don't think it's going to happen, and don't we really need something to change and reinforce that, you know, confidence building that, yes, peace is possible, two states is possible, because even somebody who's a little right of center might still be willing to support two states.
That's right. And I think, you know, I think you're right, and I think the first thing we got to do is to build some confidence is to get rid of the people, to push the people out of office who are always beating against people's confidence. And number one, of course, is Bibi Netanyahu. You know,
yep.
If Netanyahu were out of office, we had somebody like this guy Kahlon. Maybe I'm speaking out of wishful thinking Because I'll tell you what, if Kahlon does not beat Netanyahu, the only guy who can beat Netanyahu, as far as I can see, is Naftali Bennett, who's even further right than Netanyahu.
All right, Larry, we're going to take a quick break. I want you to hang on, okay?
Sure.
1 second, just hang on, and then we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll continue talking with Larry Dorfner. He is a writer for 972 Magazine. That website is 972mag.com. He does some great insight on Israeli politics. And I think Arabs and Palestinians need to engage Israeli politics to help bring about the right kind of change we need. I'm Ray Hanania here at Talk of the Town, YahalaVoice.com, 1450 AM radio in Chicago. We're going to be right back right after these messages.
علي صوتك مع صوت يا هلا.
هوم لايف فرنتشر اخر صيحات الاثاث وكل ما تحتاجه من مفروشات. هوم لايف فرنتشر الامانه الاخوه والدقه في المواعيد.
No credit needed to finance. Everyone is approved at Home Life Furniture, 13449 South Cicero Avenue in Crestwood, Illinois, 708-631-3627. Mention Yehela Voice and your delivery is free. Get $200 off when you spend $1,500.
Do you have a medical alert device? When you press the button for help, can you talk through your pendant? With many companies, you still have to talk through the base unit, and that's not much help in an emergency. The answer, LifeRun Medical Alert Systems. Simply press the button and talk to a live operator right through the pendant. If your device can't do that, upgrade to LifeRun today. The system is free, the shipping is free, and the monitoring fee is less than a dollar a day. Call LifeRun now at 1-800-421-3366 or order online at LifeRun.com.
And carry Chrysler Jeep Dodge's 72-hour sale starts now. $30 million in inventory, $5 million in discounts, and $25 million to lend will be available for this public sale at Man Carries Chrysler Jeep Dodge at Oak Lawn. Now through Monday, get $12,000 off MSRP. Get 0% for 72 months, plus a $4,500 rebate. 800 factory cars are on display. Brand new Jeep Cherokees, Grand Cherokees, minivans, Ram trucks, and more. $5 million in discounts will be made available on Man Carries $30 million of new car inventory. Stop what you're doing right now and get to Mancari's in Oak Lawn. $12,000 off MSRP. 0% for 72 months. Plus $4,500 in rebates. $30 million in inventory. And bank reps on site with $25 million to lend. You will drive today. Hurry. This public sale will absolutely end Monday. Sale hours extended till midnight at Mancari Chrysler Jeep Dodge on 95th Street, Oak Lawn.
On select models, $1,389 per thousand with zero down. With approved credit plus tax, title, license, and doc.
For years, the hearts of good people have broken for the suffering of the Syrians. More than 6 million displaced, nearly 3 million refugees, 80% are women. Children and elderly have faced growing hunger and deprivation. Syrians need food today. Your charity can help Syrians in need.
And welcome back to Talk of the Town Radio. We had a little technical difficulty there, and I apologize. But we're back on the line with our guest, Larry Dorfner, who is helping us understand Israeli politics and the upcoming elections that are going to be taking place on March 17th. Larry, I know that there's actually, several other candidates. You mentioned one, but what's the likelihood of somebody like Zippy Livni, Naftali Bennett, or Yair Lapid of becoming prime minister? Any chance at all?
Well, Bennett is the head of the most right wing party in Israel. It's
right.
The translation is called Jewish Home. He does have a chance. He does basically, you know, the biggest right wing party, the leader of the biggest of the leader of the right wing party that gets the most votes, is likely to become the next prime minister. And according to the polls now, the Likud is number one, and Naftali Bennett's Jewish Home Party is number two. Okay, if you know, if Bennett outdistances the Likud, then Bennett would become, I mean, if Bennett's party gets the largest number of votes, then he becomes the likely prime minister. The chance of Tzipi Livni getting it is virtually none.
Right.
Or Yair Lapid, virtually none. Or Isaac Herzog, the head of the Labor Party, virtually none. Because the right-wing bloc is just so much stronger than the left-wing centrist bloc.
So you don't think that we're going to have a liberal prime minister, but you're thinking maybe we might have a prime minister who's willing to reject Netanyahu's opposition to two states and take that seriously?
Yeah, I think that's a possibility with Kahlon. It's an open possibility. Because he's going to have, I'm sure if he wins, you know, and he's still a long shot, but I really think he's got a good chance, because I think so far the main issue in the campaign is economics, and he really has that issue cornered. He did something a couple of years ago. He basically single-handedly cut cell phone prices in Israel by, I don't know, 80%, something like that, and became a hero.
Now,
you know, and compared to the other, yeah.
No, I was going to say, now some skeptics are going to look at him and say, wow, he's just another, maybe he's just another Netanyahu, you know, a different suit in the same political party with the Likud. But you think Moshe Kahlon might actually be a different politician willing to do different things?
Yeah, I think so. And there's one other very important thing that I'm sure you're aware of, Ray, and that is the atmosphere in Israel, especially by these right-wing Jewish organizations and parties and individuals. There's so much bad blood. There's so much racism. There's so many attacks. You know, I'll just give you an example. I was watching the evening news, and they had a little panel discussion. They had a guy from the Likud on. You know, he says, and the election is going to be either Netanyahu is going to win, and the Likud is going to be very strong, or you're going to have Ahmed Tibi running things. You know, and this sort of thing. These are racist.
Right. That's a scare tactic. Yeah.
Yeah, it's racist scaremongering.
Right.
And this has been coming out of the right wing in Israel, you know, with greater frequency and greater amplification. And I think that the mainstream of Israeli people are fed up with it. I think that the government has moved to the right of the Israeli public, at least on the subject of race baiting and this hatred in the air and this antagonism in the air. And that's not Moshe Kahlon, and that never was. You know? So you know what? If he wins, even if he doesn't make peace with the Palestinians, at least he's not going to go out of his way to constantly pick fights and humiliate Arabs at every opportunity, like Netanyahu has been doing, and like the Likud has been doing, and like the other right-wing parties has been doing. So I think if he wins, just on that alone, it'll clear the air a lot, you know? I also think that he alone among the right-wing politicians, he gives a damn about the poor, and he gives a damn about the incredible economic inequality in Israel, and he would move to do something about that, because he's done that in his background. I think he would be a hell of an improvement. Whether he'd go all the way to make peace with Palestinians, I think that's a possibility, but just, I think you're aware of you know, what the new president, Reuven Rivlin, has been doing in Israel,
right.
Really reaching out to the Arabs and
right.
trying to soften the antagonism. I think Moshe Kahlon might be, you know, maybe not to the extent that Rivlin is doing it, but at least he would not antagonize.
So he could,
you know, be... He's not a hate freak like some of these other
right.
people are. Yeah?
He could be a step toward bringing politics back to where we could actually sit down and negotiate.
I think so. I do think so.
And
I think it's a possibility. I know.
No, I'm sorry, Larry. I apologize. I was just going to say that, you know, for a lot of people that are looking at it, Israeli politics are probably more complicated than American politics. And when you look at Netanyahu,
yeah.
It seems that not only does he have a political opposition to two states, but he has this personal, you know, animosity towards, you know, any peace that surrenders land to the Palestinians. I'm hoping you're saying that Moshe Kahlon doesn't embrace that same kind of, you know, aspect, that if it were in Israel's good, you know, to Israel's benefit, Kahlon might, you know, be willing to at least change things so that we can move in that direction.
Well, I'll tell you what. As a matter of fact, today he made a campaign stop. He was speaking to some young people at a pub in Tel Aviv. And he was quoted as saying, I will not miss an opportunity for peace. I will not hesitate to trade land for real peace. And he said that today, you know? I mean, how much it's worth, I don't know. But it's, you know, it's definitely...
More than Netanyahu's, though, right?
It's a hopeful sign.
Do you think I'm being too harsh when I criticize Netanyahu that he's been the obstacle to peace? I mean, this has been a very difficult 10 years. It's been so hard to be...
I totally agree.
It's been so polarized, hasn't it? Yeah, it's been depressing.
He has been a disaster. He has been a disaster for the Middle East. He's been a disaster for Israel, a disaster for the Palestinians. You know, and there's a tremendous sentiment, you know, not only on the left, but not only among Arabs, but among left-wing Jews and even among centrist Jews of, you know, the phrase is anybody but Bibi.
Right.
You know, Bibi has got to go. And I think it's a possibility, strong possibility.
I mean, just seeing him lose would make me feel better about moving forward.
I'd be
a little concerned about Moshe Kahlon because he's with Likud. I don't view Likud as, you know, being the vanguard of a new peace movement. But I do when, you know, again, I try to explain to Arabs that there's no 100%. You know, in democracy and elections, you don't vote and get 100% of what you want. You get a majority of what you hope for. You get a majority, and we should break away from this idea that if we don't get 100%, that it's not worth doing. You know, Arabs need to get involved in the election, especially Arab Israelis. And the Arabs who are outside of Israeli society, we should be supporting, you know, an understanding of maybe this guy, Moshe Kahlon, may be a conservative, but as you point out, a little right of center. He just might be somebody that would help us steer the ship back to a reasoned zone. You know,
we're going to find out a lot. He hasn't come out with, you know, in Israel on each of the parties, they have a list of candidates, right? And he hasn't put together a list of candidates yet. But when he does, it's going to be very instructive. And I'm sure, I'm absolutely sure, there are going to be some very prominent people, you know, on his party list who are firm believers in a two-state solution. And if that comes to pass, if you look down that list of candidates and you see a lot of people who are known as really, you know, ardent supporters of a Palestinian state alongside Israel, well, then that's going to say something about Moshe Kahlon and where he wants to go.
We're talking with Larry Dorfner. He's a veteran journalist, Israeli-American who lives in Israel now, and he's on the line with us. He writes for 972 Magazine. 972mag.org is the website where you can read some of his stuff. Larry.
Excuse me. mag.com.
Excuse me. 972mag.com. I want to get that out there because it's a great site. I read it all the time. I enjoy it. And I think your writing's been very good. Larry, help me understand something also about, the influence of the right parties in Israel. I mean, are they as monolithic and towering as they appear, or are we just in an atmosphere where the majority of people are afraid and therefore they look like they're hard right? Do you know what I mean? If you separate the hard right from the hard left, is there a big group of people in the middle? If we could give them confidence.
Yeah, there really is. Yeah, there is a very large group of people in the middle, but they're afraid, and there's nobody to lead them, and if there was somebody to lead them, things would be different. I mean, when Ariel Sharon's second term, you know, he decided to get out of Gaza. He didn't get entirely out of Gaza. He didn't get, he got out of the interior of Gaza, but unfortunately he left the blockade there. But at the very least, you know, he got the settlers out of there and he got the soldiers out of the inside, you know, which at that time was a revolutionary kind of thing.
Yeah.
You know? And nobody could have done it except Sharon, but Sharon was the kind of leader who could, you know, people trusted him to make that move. You know, if such a leader came along now, things could change.
Yeah, and I always thought that Sharon's move was part of a chess game that the Arabs basically gave up on. The Palestinians kind of allowed, you know, that to be portrayed in such a negative way rather than seeing it as an opportunity to do something. You know, we kind of allowed Hamas to really build their strength on that, you know, removal. I think Sharon intentionally wanted to build up Hamas because I think sometimes the far right in Israel, like the far right in among Arabs and Palestinians and the Islamic movement, I think they want, you know, the extremists on the other side because it makes it easier for them to go to their people and justify extremist reactions.
I wouldn't agree. I think that Sharon in his second term had changed. I think he wasn't the extremist that he was before. And I think the proof was his pullout from the interior of Gaza. And he was talking about a limited pullout from the West Bank. He was never going to make peace with the Palestinians. He was never ready to go far enough. But he changed. Sharon changed.
So what should we have done
in
as Arab? What do you think we should have?
Say that again.
What do you think we should have done as Palestinians when he did that? Recognize that he would never have really made peace with us, but he took steps toward a new paradigm that might have allowed peace to happen. Right? I mean, he wouldn't have been the guy that would have signed the deal to create a Palestinian state, but what he did might have allowed us to actually move toward that goal.
Well, I really can't say that I think the Palestinians did anything. I mean, you know, I wish the Palestinians in Gaza had not supported Hamas.
Right.
But can I say that if they supported Abu Mazen and the Palestinian Authority, that things would be different? I can't say that.
Is that part of the problem that the Palestinian leadership? We really don't have a very strong leadership outside of the militant strength that is represented by Hamas.
Well, I think the fault for that is Israel. I think that Abu Mazen has done everything that a Palestinian leader could ever be expected to do for peace and more. And Ehud Olmert was ready to try to make peace with him. He did try. It got broken off by the war in Gaza in 2009. But Netanyahu, who's been in power since 2009, has done nothing but say no to Abu Mazen. Abu Mazen is the Palestinian leader that Israel has been waiting for. It has been saying it wants to make peace with. And unfortunately, we have this guy Netanyahu. We have an extremely right-wing government that is rejecting any chance for that. I think the fault for Abu Mazen's weakness lies with Israel, I'm afraid. I think if Israel was smart, it would have made peace with Abu Mazen years ago.
Yeah,
and I'm not the only one who thinks that. Shimon Peres has been saying things like that for years.
Yeah, and you know, of course, in the Arab community, we're up in our own battle. You know, we don't have elections. You know, we keep talking about how we want to learn to be democratic, but the truth is we don't engage in elections. I mean, look at the whole Arab world, this, you know, the Arab Spring. Yeah. One country, Tunisia, had elections, and the other ones, look what happened to everybody else. It was like, are you kidding me?
Yeah.
It makes it very depressing and so easy, if I were a right-wing Israeli, to point to that and lead my people away from peace, saying, look, we got to come up with another dynamic. Listen, if Kahlon, and I'm taking your word for it, I'm going to do more research on him, but if, let's say, something were to change along those lines that we've been talking about, what would be needed, do you think, to follow through, to bring things down? Because I know what's going to happen. As soon as some Israeli makes a gesture of peace, there's going to be some extremist Palestinian that's going to blow something up in opposition, and then the Israelis will go back to using that to justify not doing anything. You know, it's almost like we're in this cycle where we keep doing the same things over and over again. How do we break out of that? How do we do that?
I don't think that Abu Mazen is into that. I think that if Israel makes a gesture to peace to Abu Mazen, Abu Mazen will welcome it. He'll embrace it.
I think he will, but I'm just not sure.
I'm
just not sure he's strong enough.
And as far as the chance of extremism by Palestinians, Abu Mazen has done an incredibly good job of stopping Palestinian terror in the West Bank. And there's no reason to think, and he's committed to going on with it. Because, you know, I'm not worried about an extremist reaction from Palestinians in the face of Israeli peace offer, because I think Abu Mazen, you know, I think he's a fine leader. I think he's really trying to do the right thing.
Do you think Israelis are at a point where they're strong enough to see past the violence of extremist groups and recognize it for what it is, as an the same type of provocation to prevent peace, that if we were to ever achieve peace, we would undermine the extremists and the violence?
I don't know.
I know, that's a tough one for both of us. Yeah. You know, for both sides. Are you optimistic or are you pessimistic moving forward?
Well, you know, I think, like I said, you know, maybe wishful thinking, but I am optimistic about about Kahlon's chances, and I think that if he does get elected, he'll have a lot of moderates and liberals in his government. And I think that the West will, and certainly America, will see this as an opportunity, you know, that, you know, excuse me for being maybe overkill with rhetoric, but, you know, the Wicked Witch is gone, you know, Netanyahu. It's a chance to start again. And, yeah, so I see this as an opportunity. I see this as, you know, an opening.
I hope you're right, Larry. Larry,
but if Kahlon doesn't win, if Netanyahu wins again,
right,
I'm going to be, you know,
it's going to be bad.
I'll be in my cups, you know?
Yeah, it'll be bad, right? Yeah.
And if Bennett wins, then I don't know.
That would be the worst option, wouldn't it?
That's right. Yeah,
and
for sure.
Listen, if Moshe Kahlon is, let's say he's elected, would he bring in a guy like Avigdor Lieberman and keep him in a position of influence? Because that guy frightens me.
Yes, he could.
You think
yes,
so? That wouldn't and be
I,
good,
like
though.
I said, he can't.
That wouldn't be
well,
good. I mean, for the image of
no,
change.
No, it wouldn't. But the problem is, the problem is there aren't going to be enough left-wingers and centrists, or even left-wingers, centrists, and Arabs for Kahlon to form a government without the right wing. He's going to have to, you know, just because of the electoral math, he's going to have to bring in a right-wing party. And what I think is that there's probably no chance that he's going to really make a serious move for peace if he gets elected in his first term.
Right.
However, if he starts moving in that direction, you know, Israelis have elections every year or two, something like that.
Right.
Just like Netanyahu's breaking up the government and calling new elections, Kahlon could do that, and then things could change a second time.
That could be a bitter medicine for us, is what you're saying, that we may actually, it may not be easy when Arabs
and even
left-wing Israelis look at this election. If even the results have Moshe Kahlon winning, it may not be easy for people to see the positive in that. They may turn toward the negative, don't you think? That's the big fear I have. It won't be as sophisticated.
I think that just seeing Netanyahu out, you know, would be a relief. And if Kahlon keeps talking the way he's talking, and like I said, if he has a lot of people, a lot of, you know, liberals on his party list,
right,
and he brings in Tzipi Livni or Yair Lapid or the Labor Party into his government, you know, I think it'll be a large step forward.
This guy could make a name for himself. Moshe Kahlon could make a name for himself and do what no Israeli has done and bring peace to the Middle East. The possibility, I think, you know, can be there. And plus, we also have to look at the relationship between Kahlon and the new relationship with Barack Obama, who is in his final term, you know, his final 2 years. He's a lame duck president. Obama could push a guy like Moshe Kahlon, work with him, get a better working relationship, and maybe convince him to do things with American backing that might benefit, you know, a movement towards peace.
That's right. I think that's a possibility. I agree.
Boy, you know, you and I are too optimistic. You think we're too optimistic? I'm a little.
I know that I'm speaking out of wishful thinking.
Yes.
I know that that this is half my hope and half my brain talking, you know?
Right.
But I think what I'm talking about is accurate. How big a possibility that is, we'll see. I know it is a possibility.
Yeah.
Question is how big a possibility.
And it is a better option than what we have now. Even if it's not the perfect option, it's far better than what we have. We might actually see a difference in the way we deal with each other, maybe a different atmosphere, a little less tension. It's
that,
intense.
That would change.
I hope.
Yeah.
I hope.
Yeah.
Larry, listen, I want to thank you for taking the time to join us. I apologize for a little technical snafu there in the middle there, but this connection has been very good. We've gotten a great connection with you.
It's a pleasure to finally talk to you because, we were neighbors as columnists for the Jerusalem Post.
Yes.
We're Facebook buddies, so finally we get to talk.
I took a beating. Listen, I took a beating in the Arab community for writing for the Jerusalem Post, but I tried to explain to people that I wanted to write for a newspaper in Israel. I don't want to just talk to my own people and tell them what they want to hear.
Sure.
I want to talk to Israelis.
Sure.
I want them to hear something.
Sure.
And, there was a lot of pushback, but it was the Arabs that sometimes they get so angry, rejectionist, and, it's a little discouraging. But I'll tell you, there were moments of great encouragement in the community that came from that. Makes me believe that deep down we're going to overcome the extremists on both sides and we are going to have peace and we will have a day when we both can sit there, sip coffee and not worry about whether it's in Israel or Palestine. We'll actually be able to do what we want without anybody harassing us. Larry Dierfner is my guest. He's a writer, longtime journalist. He lives in Israel now and he writes for a great online magazine, 972mag.com. 972mag.com. I hope you'll all go there, read some of his writings, friend him on Facebook, and share your thoughts. Good, bad, or ugly, friendly, whatever. Nothing helps a journalist more than to get feedback of whatever kind. Larry, any final thoughts?
Yeah, I really enjoyed this and your description of, how things could be really had me smiling. It's really a pleasure to talk to you, Ray.
You're a great guy. Larry, thank you so much. And I appreciate you taking the time so late there, in Israel and in the Middle East to take that call. You have a great evening and, we'll talk to you later.
You too, Ray.
All right, Larry. Bye bye.
All right. See you.
All right. That was Larry Dierfner of 972mag.com. He's a great writer. It's a tough message and, he's very honest about it. He says, not going to be an easy message to sell. Moshe Kahlon is a member of the Likud. But he says that he's more a centrist than Netanyahu, maybe a little right of center. I think he served, as a member of the Knesset for Likud and as Minister of Communications and Welfare and Social Services. He was born in a neighborhood outside of Hadera. His parents are Libyan immigrants. And I wonder, sometimes I think the Israeli Arabs, I should say the Israelis who lived in Arab countries, were more against peace with the Arabs than the European Jews who went to Israel. And it concerns me, but here we have Larry saying that he thinks this guy might actually move us back toward a position where maybe we can have peace. Were you encouraged or is it just still discouragement? What do you think, Khaled? Really? Okay. I hope, listen, it's so much better to hope for peace than it is to be depressed, isn't it? Do we want to be depressed? I look at the headlines in the Middle East, the conflict, the deaths. I don't want to see any more people killed in Gaza. And no matter whose fault it is, I just don't want any more killings. I just don't want anybody killed. Yeah, there are a lot, I think so. But we need hope, right? We can't stand up and how can we get up there and say we believe in something good happening when you got a guy like Netanyahu who is just horrible? The guy is, it's just terrible. He's been... Yeah, the way he treats Obama, too, I'll tell you, I'm not 100% happy with Obama, but the way I was talking earlier was, look, as Arabs, we should recognize the true power of democracy. You don't get 100%, but 51% gives you so much more power to do things, and we could achieve all the things that we want to do. If we just accept the idea that that we can't get 100%. We can get a lot, and a lot can make a difference if we want to. I don't know. We got a couple minutes if there are any callers that want to call in, share their views. Maybe you're not as optimistic as we are It's kind of a little, it's hard. You know, I'm hesitant to be optimistic. But our number is 708-321-1313, extension 1, here at Yahala Voice. I don't care what they say. By the way, I want to thank Fatty Zanayat, the attorney, for joining Yahala Voice the last 2 weeks, sitting in for me while I was taking some time to, you know, get a little breather and a break. I appreciate him taking the time and, you know, coming here and filling in for me while I was out. Yahala Voice is a great place. It reaches so many people. I get so many emails, maybe because I'm more of an American Arab. You know, I don't get the hardcore Arab community calling me all the time, but I get a lot of emails. And I have a big following on Facebook of a lot of Arabs in America. I wish my Arabic were better, but I'll tell you what, if my Arabic were better, I wouldn't have been as successful as a journalist in this country. You know, it really wouldn't. And listen, I'll tell you what, the position, I'm moving back into a position of some influence in journalism. I'm writing for these newspapers, Des Plaines Valley News, the Southwest News Herald. The regional news is a big one. And the Payless Reporter newspapers, covering the Southwest suburbs of Chicago. You can go get that regional news and the Payless Reporter in Orland Park. And read some of the columns. And I want to hear your ideas. You email me and tell me, you know, about your stories. I was talking to Reem Odeh the other day, and she was telling me about how this wife of a Orland Park police officer heard her speak Arabic and went up to her and started yelling at her, saying, quit speaking Arabic in public. You have no right to speak Arabic. And I'm thinking, I can't believe that. So I'm going to get that story and I'm going to put it in the paper because I want Americans to hear that story and read it. Let's go to the phone lines and welcome a caller. You're on the air here at Talk of the Town. Go ahead, caller.
Ahmed again, how are you?
Hey, thank you for calling. I apologize for making you wait there.
No problem. Actually, I'm driving 1 hour every day, so that's no problem. I just want to kind of like you ask the question if
yes.
we're optimistic or pessimistic.
What do you think?
I think I am realistic.
Yes.
I don't feel, I mean, I was born in Jordan, but I know my dad, Allah yarhamu wa yarhamna jami'an, he was born in Palestine. I don't believe that there will be any president from Israel, especially with the Likud party, regardless if they are right center or maybe close to center or close to right or whatever,
yeah.
that they are up to peace. And then I'm not saying this one just from, I'm not a politician,
right.
But I can say from looking at the history, I don't believe that there's anyone will convince those people to make peace. And the reason why, I mean, look at them when they go in any war. As you see that the war in Gaza, the war in everywhere they did it, and some Russia, like you know, there are many thousands of proofs that these people are really, really criminals and killers, and all of them they are the same gang. And with all my respect to some of them, maybe
yes.
there's some I didn't know about. But I don't feel like Ray from hearing what, you know, my parents, they were talking about a long time ago, my grandparents.
Right.
And listening at, you know, what they are doing before and that what they have done and killing children. They have some something in their hearts
yeah.
against Arabs, against
there
Palestinians.
There is a, I agree. I do agree with you
so,
to this
so
point.
This thing,
I do agree with you that... deep down, sometimes I look at Israelis and I go, you know what? They have the power to do the right thing and they won't do it. And it's so
easy
for them to get angry at us because they can get away with it and nobody holds them responsible. But you know what? I do blame us though, because instead of being strategic, you know, we become very emotional. And when somebody, like, if I talk about it, instead of having a discussion, you're respectful, and I appreciate it. But, you know, there are a lot of people that are going to be yelling. Listen, thank you for that call, though. I appreciate it. And
You're welcome. That's what the way we should talk. You know, we
should listen
to each other and, you know.
And come up with a great.
Respect each other.
Thank you. We appreciate it. Take one
thank
more
you
caller.
So
you're welcome. Let's go to our last caller here on Talk of the Town Radio. You're on the air, caller. How are you?
Yeah, How you doing, brother Ray?
Good. I'm doing good. Thank you.
This is Mansoor Muhammad.
Hey, Mansoor, how are you? Thank you.
All right, my friend. I always listen to your show on Friday. You know, I want to tell you, I want to make a comment about, Israeli leaders or prime ministers or whatever. To me, be honest with you, I lived 20 years of my life over there back home. And from what I see, it's just two faces, takes power, two faces for the same coin.
Yeah.
What did we get since 1994 Oslo Accord?
Nothing.
Since Yasser Arafat. What did we get?
Nothing
but destruction, land confiscation, more settlements, more arrests,
but let me,
and so on. You know, the list goes on and on.
But let me ask you a question, because I think you make a great point. You're right. We didn't get anything from the peace process, but have we gotten anything from the non-peace process? It seems like we're getting the same thing no matter what we do.
But, Mr. Ray, the thing is, you know,
I'm not criticizing you. I'm just...
As a Palestinian, you know, all Europe and the United States, if they want to put some more pressure on Israel, I think we could achieve peace. But there is no real pressure on Israel.
Right. Well, that's where I agree with you.
A lot of things.
I agree with you. I think the big problem is you and me, we don't put pressure on Israel, and we should. We should be more engaged in the election. We should be giving Obama more support. But you know what? We get caught up if we don't get 100%. If Obama doesn't do 100% of what we expect, we get mad at him and we throw up our hands and, we yell. We have to avoid that. We got to be smart, don't we?
Absolutely. And be honest with you, I'm kind of like about being pessimistic and optimistic. I'm kind of like 60%, 65% pessimistic about any prospects for peace process, honestly.
Yeah.
I want to be honest with you before you close. I always listen to your show.
Thank you.
Listening to you made me, just call you and make this comment about,
I appreciate it. I think we need
Mr. Ray.
Thank you very much. We need to have these discussions more and more. Mansoor, that was great for the two of you to call. We're at the end of the show here. It's, 2 minutes toward 5 o'clock. I'm Ray Hanani. I want to thank Khalid Khalifa did I get your name right? Khalifa. That's why I never speak Arabic, okay? Because my Khalid, that's what I keep saying. But it's disrespectful. I gotta learn Arabic. But I tell you what, honestly, if I had learned Arabic, I never would have been a journalist. Because in this country, how you speak, your accent, and you have to think like an American to overcome and take over journalism. We can't take over journalism by thinking the way we would as an Arab. And a lot of Arabs get mad at me when I say that. But you know what? I made the sacrifice to do that. I'm going to help us. I appreciate it, Khalid. Thank you so much. I want to thank all the callers and the listeners. Go to our website at yahalavoice.com and also thearabdailynews.com. You can get the podcast for this interview we did with Larry Derfner from the 972mag.com is his website. I'm Ray Hanania. We'll talk to you next Friday here at yahalavoice.com. Have a great weekend. Bye-bye.
You're listening to Yahala Voice.